Welcome back to Lions Collective on Wednesdays. It's Wednesday, April 15th. The crew is back to talk about the NFL draft. We are just about a week away from the NFL draft. All these mock drafts I've been reading, my brain is rotting. So we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. I know you guys are suffering too. But we got a lot to get to today. Brad Holmes also spoke to the media. We'll cover that. So we have some comments on that to kind of parlay with the interview we were able to do, which you can go check out, by the way. It's on the channel. Go give that a watch if you haven't. And then we'll get to some draft stuff. But we are back. I'm your host, Jeff Ifrady from Crunch Time Sports, Justin Rogers, DJ Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and then, of course, Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. How are we feeling today, fellas?
I think we left Will in the parking lot of Dog and Pony last week.
Well, I finally sobered up from all the Colonel Lager, so I can officially drive again now. I'm pretty psyched. Hey, Jeff, how many mock drafts do you think you've consumed in the past week?
Well, if you count me watching Peter Schrager's today, I would say about 45. Are we counting the ones I've done? You know, now add another 68 on there. So yeah,
doing numbers.
Mock draft. I think I could tell you where everyone's going to go, even though it's all going to be wrong. I can tell you where everyone predicted. I can tell you.
You know what's funny? Every year, I do like a mock draft mailbag, because especially like a week before the draft, that's like the perfect time to do it. So I have readers and probably listeners too. I'll send out like a tweet. I'll say, everyone send me your best mock drafts, and I'll like evaluate them later. It's a nice way to break up some of the mock draft like BS that we have to do around this time. Yes. And I can tell that the brand is strong, because I would say 60 to 70% of the mock drafts being sent to me have Kyle Lewis in it. So the brand is strong. Nice. Yeah. Trying to win me over.
This raises a question. What was the worst mock draft you saw?
The worst ones are the ones where they just trade like a million times within the first and second round, where I'm like, how did you end up with 6 second round picks? That makes zero sense. So I'm still coming through them, but I've gotten a few of those.
I love throwing Ben Raven under the bus every week, but that's absolutely Ben's strategy.
Yes. He does it for fun.
I looked at a mock draft the other day from a listener. It had 14 picks on it. Yeah, like there's like how many guys, I mean, we're drafting a whole new roster here. I mean, this is an NBA lineup. I mean, we're talking about 15 players on this.
14 first rounders. Why?
I love it. I'm a sicko, so I kind of enjoy it. But then I'm also like a week away from the draft, and now I just can't wait for this dang thing to start. Which, by the way, I will be at Dog and I know that you guys will be grinding during that, but I'll be at a Dog and Pony Show doing a draft party. So shout out Kyle. So
nice.
Damn.
Hopefully pounding Colonel Lagers in a positive way. Hopefully it's not like sadness type of pounding Colonel Lagers, but I'll be there. And we also have a new sponsor, by the way, Prize Picks. So we'll
shout out Prize Picks.
New sponsor, Lions Collective. So big shout out to them. But we'll get into the Brad Holmes stuff. So he talked this week as pre-NFL draft press conference. We'll get into some of your guys' takeaways. You were there, and I know we were able to talk to him, but I think he expanded on a lot of different things. Talked about the all-in mentality, you know, which people were like thrown off by, but I want your guys' takeaways. You were there. What'd you think of what Brad kind of talked about and the things that were discussed in the press conference?
Respectfully, I feel you could take Brad Holmes's pre-draft press conference from 2021 through this week and play a recording of any of them, and they would be indiscernible. Like, you just couldn't tell a difference. And that's not a complaint. Like, I think it's kind of a reality, right? Like, the topics that are covered are broad intentionally. You know, they're not tipping their hands on the guys they want or, you know, what positions they view as strengths. They're just not giving away any of what they view as nuggets of information at this point. And so, you know, it, speaking of Dog and Pony Show, I mean, that's absolutely what those press conferences have become.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like his real pre-draft press conference was with us a couple weeks earlier. I mean, for sure. Got to ask him some questions about how he sees the roster. And, you know, some of those questions were asked. Again, he just kind of skimmed over them. It's like, okay, I already did this. I feel like Brad's just kind of locked in on the draft at this point. He's like, look, I sat down with these guys for 50 minutes. I got nothing else to say. I'll see you guys in a week when we start making some picks. That was kind of my takeaway. But there are a couple interesting nuggets. You know, what's funny is I tried to ask him, like at the combine, I think, about the balance of like drafting an older player. And I don't think he understood my question at the time, but like Ben Raven or someone else like asked him about that this time around, and you know, was pretty fair and was like, look, you know, I understand it is a discussion. You have to weigh like the second contract stuff with a guy being maybe pushing 30 by the time the second contract comes around. I do think there are some prospects that could catch their eye that are a little bit older in this class. A guy I've been looking at is Keontae Scott from Miami. I think he's 25 already, so it's not great, but I think he's a baller. I think we've talked about him a little bit on the show, but he'd be probably a second round guy, maybe third, but it's like, do you want to spend a second or third on a guy that you have him for 4 years, he'll be 29 by the time to pay him again? I don't know. So that was an interesting little nugget from Brad. I don't know. I feel like he was pretty generic with it, which is fine at this point for being a week out from the draft, but nothing super new from Brad, I guess. I think we got more insightful stuff on our own pod here. So appreciate that.
Whoa.
And Will fell down.
Yeah, I'm back. Look at that response time, dude. Resilience.
That was quick. Yeah.
Come on. Let's see. I did think that Brad was different in the tone that he struck with the media compared to his other pre-draft press conferences. Probably about the same amount of information shared, but he seemed sort of intentionally distant. Like he just wanted to get in and get out and get back to pre-draft planning. I think in the past, anyways, he's been a little bit more engaging, maybe a little bit more like he was with us when we sat down, the four of us, with him a month or so ago. And, you know, I did feel like anytime anyone of me, J. Roger Colton, asked a question, he was going to be like, well, hey, relax. I gave you guys an hour a few weeks ago. This is for everyone else here. But I would say the most notable nuggets that come out of the press conference, not that it should have been any surprise, is that Brad says they don't feel pressed at all to draft in the first round either an offensive tackle or an edge rusher, even though a lot of us feel like they kind of have to draft in the first round either an offensive tackle or an edge rusher. And then he also touched on a little bit their approach to drafting injured players, which obviously is a hot button issue and something that they haven't shied away from in the past, and feels kind of applicable to a conversation we're going to get to here in a little bit with Jermaine McCoy. But, you know, he explained their stance being that if a guy doesn't have a long track record of injuries, then they're not going to rule him out of consideration. Like that was the rationale with JMO. He only had the torn ACL. It was a clean recovery. And so they were willing to take that risk. And again, you could apply similar logic to Jermaine McCoy.
I think the annual discussion of best player available versus need, I know it's almost tiring because it gets repeated so long, but you know, it merits, I guess, at least a little dissection, right? Like if the best player on their board in the first round is a quarterback or a wide receiver, like they're gonna pass, right? Like that's there are caveats to it. In addition to that, you know, I think that we've seen where they have years where they have really glaring needs. You know, I think I've referenced this before with Terry and Arnold, right? Like they had this massive need at cornerback. They're not afraid to kind of move around the board, move up to make those two things marry, right? Like I think they recognize needs. I think they recognize both short-term and more so with the draft long-term needs. And if, you know, they have to, they'll move, but they're also not going to force it. And I think that's probably good business. Like, you know, if you've got two guys, you need a defensive end and you've got a different position, a tight end or whatever, and they're 20 spots apart on your board, like why reach for the guy that's 20 spots further down? You know, there's a reason he's there. So think of it as a 4-year thing. Don't think of the draft as a 1-year thing.
And on that topic, like I know me in particular, I use the 2023 draft a lot just because I think it's such a fascinating like case study for how they do business. But if you go back to that draft, obviously everyone was linking them to a cornerback or maybe an edge that year. And I mean, in some ways we still are, but back then everyone's like, okay, you got to take a corner at one of these picks, right? At number 18, there was a cornerback that was available that they could have taken that was being mocked to them in that range. That was Maryland's Deontay Banks. He ultimately was drafted by the Giants 24th overall. Obviously, they took Jack Campbell. I was looking at Banks's stats last year and just his PFF grade, just for context for the show. Banks allowed the second highest passer rating when targeted in the NFL among cornerbacks last year, and the fourth highest reception rate among qualified cornerbacks last year. En route to a PFF grade of 42.2, which was 112th out of 114 qualified cornerbacks. Jack Campbell was obviously a first-team All-Pro. going back to that same draft, obviously another player that they were, I think, widely mocked was Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech. I believe he went 7th to the Raiders that year. And obviously went 6, they trade down to 12. They pick up Gibbs and Laporta with the extra capital there. I was looking at Tyree Wilson. His pass rush win rate was 9.1% last season. That ranked 56th out of 61 qualified edge rushers with a minimum of 300 pass rush snaps. Gibbs is obviously a 3-time Pro Bowler. So, like, I know everyone wants them to go for need in the draft. And I think, you know, as they've gone on in this thing, like, the needs obviously shrink. I think, you know, back then in 2023, you could have just thrown a dart and taken BPI. I totally understand that. I think that's probably shrunk a little bit. I think there are some glaring needs that they still have to address at some point, but they feel they've done that in free agency at the very least. So they don't necessarily have to force that. I think that's where you can get in trouble is you can have a Deontay Banks instead of a Jack Campbell. You can have a Tyree Wilson over Jahmyr Gibbs if you're going just for need. So obviously they think about this for a reason and they have this process for a reason. And more often than not, it's worked out. We'll see if it changes at all this year.
You know, Colton, you go even further down on just the edges they passed over, and it's just there's nothing there. It's kind of what we were talking about with this last draft, right? Like they didn't draft an edge. They drafted Tyleek, and then there was no edges taken for another, I don't know what it was, 16 picks. And the only guy that, you know, really put up notable sack numbers is currently facing 3 felony charges and was off the board before Tyleek Williams was selected. So, you know, could you have skipped Jack Campbell and drafted, I lost track of the list here, but Miles Murphy, Uzma, our Foskey, like these are the guys that win in the next 15, 20 picks that have done little to nothing in this league. Mm-hmm. And you have a first team all pro. And so, you know, look, Brad's not perfect. We don't want to make it look like he's perfect. The last 2 years have been filled with some, not particularly impactful classes, but the point of BPA stands here, right? Like don't reach for a guy just because he fills a position, because you know you might get a guy that's off your roster in 3 or 4 years versus a guy you're wanting to bring back for a second contract, like so many of the guys they've re-signed already.
Yeah, it feels like he's really going to be put to the test too with BPA next Thursday night, because there's a pretty good chance that when their pick number 17 rolls around, there's 3 or 4 first round graded offensive tackles available, probably 2 or 3 first round graded edge rushers available, at least by like popular consensus. And we're going to find out exactly what the Lions think about those players based on who they pick on Thursday night. I mean, like at edge rusher, it's, you know, obviously Reese and Bailey and most likely Bain are gone, but then you're going to have, you know, your Fox on the board, your TJ Parker's on the board, probably your Akeem Mesidor's on the board, and an offensive tackle, you could assume that Maui Noah and Fano are gone, but like beyond that, Freeling might be on the board. Most likely Blake Miller is on the board. So we're going to get a sort of a truth serum take on exactly what the Lions think about those players at those positions. So it makes for a pretty fascinating plot on next Thursday night.
I think it'll be so much more interesting, Will, if it's some of those guys you just mentioned, and then also Ionye and Sadiq are both there as well. Like now you've got a top guard and a top tight end. Like now you have like clear best players at their positions that can offer your roster something short-term or long-term. Versus I really like Blake Miller. I like his tape. I like his grit, if you will, his football character. But, like, is he better than those guys as a long-term football player? I think that's a tougher case to argue.
Mm-hmm. I would add Dylan Thienemann in that mix, too. Like,
yeah,
he's the best player available. And it's like, do you want to go safety in the first round? A lot of people would probably not like that. Some people would probably get some split decisions there. But, yeah, it'd make for an interesting conversation for sure.
Can I just have a sidebar about Thienemann here?
Yeah, please.
I was looking at his tape today because it's just a guy that I've kind of ignored, I guess, largely because I don't think they're going to draft a safety. But if there is one, that's the one right in the first round. And I'm like, dude, this guy's Brian Branch, like in terms of where he plays on the field, how he plays. But he's a little bit bigger. He's probably a lot more athletic, at least a little bit more athletic. And it's like, what does that look like with him and Branch on the field at the same time? And I'm thinking like, damn, that's a super fun, versatile defense that maybe is a little light weight wise in some spots, but like still super, super dynamic. And I think it would be a really fun, tough defense to scheme against.
And if you don't take him, you run the risk of the Vikings scooping him up a pick later. So star safety for like the next decade.
Yeah. The next Harrison Smith, locked and loaded.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great comp. It's a great comp.
By the way. I mean, come on, it's too easy.
But they also got that Toledo safety, Emmanuel McNeil Warren. Like Toledo's just
pulling out
safety. He's a dog. They really are. I don't know what's going on in the 419, but they're getting dudes coming out in the league here.
Jeff, what would be your reaction next Thursday night if basically what we just outlined plays out? Let's say that the top two tackles are gone in Fano and Maui Noah, and the top three edges are gone in Bain, Reese, and Bailey, and the Lions go with Thieneman.
I'll tell you this. The only pick that I think, because I spoke about this, sometimes like people are so hyper-focused on edge and tackle that if you're going to take a safety, honestly, I'm more open to any defensive player. Honestly, like if they take Jermaid McCoy, I can see the vision. I can see the vision with Dylan. I can see the vision with a linebacker even. I don't know if there's one worthy of it at that pick, but if you trade back, I can still see the vision. The only thing I can't really see the vision for is, like, in my opinion, this year, like getting a player and even for the future, just value wise at 17, is any offensive player but an offensive lineman. That's where I think I understand Kenyon Sadiq is a talent, but I think that one with staying, not that I think he's a bad player, it's just at 17 to take a tight end in my opinion, didn't have Brock Bowers, these historic numbers where you're like, this guy's a for sure Hall of Fame tight end. I would probably crash out. I'm just a crash out guy, so I'm just being honest with you guys. But on defense, I'm more flexible. I think I'd be okay with it. I'm preparing myself, just kind of how Brad Holmes operates, that like I'd rather have Jermaid McCoy, arguably the best corner, than like the fourth offensive tackle, just because we need a tackle. Like, that's where I'm at, and I'm comfortable with that.
It's very grounded and reasonable.
Hey, I'm growing. You know, this is a year of growing. Lions Collective has done a lot for me personally. So I'm. This is me. This is me growing in front of the chat and everyone. So let's go.
Can I flip that on its head just for the sake of conversation and play some devil's advocate here?
Yeah.
Based on how the Lions rose to prominence in 2022, 2023 and beyond, powered by their offensive line, could you argue that for this team, and the way this team wants to play offensive football, and with the quarterback that this team has, and the downhill rushing attack that this team wants to employ, that the third or fourth best offensive tackle, assuming he's starter level for a long time, would be as or more impactful as the first or second graded cornerback or safety in this draft?
Well, I think almost obviously, right? Like, because that's a guy that's going to be on the field every single snap. Right. And so if you believe in that guy and you're not going back to the BPA conversation, you're not reaching to get a guy you don't love. Like, if you love the dude and he's going to play every snap and you believe he fits what you do. Yeah. Like that, there's value there. And I finally got a chance to kind of go through the offensive tackles today and yesterday and really, you know, kind of consume what they were about more so than reading the experts' opinions on them. And I just walk away even more convinced that offensive line is where they're going in the first round. Like, I think the depth is there, whether it's Freeling. Like I said, I have no problem with them drafting Blake Miller at 17. I don't. Like, I think he fits what they do. He's athletic. He does everything well. He's tough. Like, and so, like, you know, I don't know if that's the guy they love. I have a hard time believing they don't love him, but there are three or four that could be in that range that I could absolutely see them taking and being content with.
I think the difference here is, like, just because there are three or four names out there doesn't mean like they're going to love all three or four. yeah, right, to take a tackle, they would probably have to love the guy. Because I really think they are comfortable with Borum, at least for 2026. So if there's a player ranked higher on the board, and the tackle that they want goes before they get sniped, then they'll just move on. So it really has to be. I know it's easy for us to be like, oh, they have 7 first round tackles that they could choose from.
Right.
Go up and get one or sit and go back. But it has to be the guy that they like. Otherwise, they'll pass. So,
yeah, I would question too, like, is this a, and this is where I would like to get into the mind of Brad Holmes to understand like his perspective, because he'll never probably, he'll never reveal this type of stuff. I'm sure he'll hint at it, but is, from a GM's perspective, like, are you trying to hit home runs? Or are you trying to just get on base? Like, when you look at a player like Blake Miller, you know, he might fit everything personality wise, player wise. He might not be the, he might have a ceiling to be an all pro, but you know, he's going to be a starter for a while and be someone you never have to worry about. But then you have Jermaid McCoy, who could be an all pro or all pro player, but he might not fit maybe some of the other stuff that you look for, like with grit in the type of player that they like. So I'm kind of curious which way Brad would lean in that situation. Like, if they just are so in love with Blake, his mentality, the way he plays football, is it worth, like, to what Will said, the value of that, having a right tackle that could play a while for you? I would be curious.
I think when you're drafting where they're drafting, and when I say that, I'm talking bottom half of the first round, high floor is important. You know, if you draft high floor guys in day one and day two, you know, and when you're top 10, like, everybody's high ceiling, right? But if you draft consistently high floor guys and maybe sacrifice a little bit of ceiling, you have a chance of building a really damn good roster. And we already know, like, the roster is loaded with guys that are smashing up against the ceiling. So I think the high floor guys become even more valuable to rounding out the totality of the roster.
That feels especially true on the offensive line, especially a tackle. Like, whatever tackle you draft, assuming you take one this year, is going to spend most, maybe all of his career playing opposite Penei Sewell, which is going to solve a lot of problems for that offensive tackle. And they may even end up spending a lot of their career playing next to what I think most of us believe is a potential Pro Bowl guard in Tate Ratledge. And that can solve a lot of problems. So if the Lions can just find a stable option at tackle, it feels like inserting him into this offensive line would actually push his ceiling higher based on the pieces around him.
That's where it gives me a little bit of pause with a guy like Ihonashore. I see everything everybody else sees, like the size, his calves are as big as my waist, like just a monstrous human being. You see the athletic testing, you see the explosion on film, but you see a guy that looks like he's only been playing football for 4 years. When I wrote him up today, I said something like, this is what I imagine Giovanni Manu would look like if he went to Arizona State instead of British Columbia. Like, he'd just be a
people will love that cop.
Well, all I'm saying is, like, he's had two extra years of just like better coaching and development, but like, he's still at least 1 year away from being a reliable NFL starter, and maybe two. And that's fine right now with Larry Borum, but like, You're banking on ceiling there, and I just don't think the Lions are at a place where the ceiling gambles are worth it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some teams that you could, like the Dolphins at 11, they can take a player and you know, take time developing that player. I think the Lions are in a little bit of a different situation. We have actually some super chats. People are
super chats. At us,
so shout out to. Raw Biz, thank you for $5 Canadian. Shout out to Raw Biz over in Canada. He says, I challenge you all to rewatch Lions versus Bengals. Speaking of Giovanni Manu, number 59, Manu played all game, did give up 2 sacks, had about 5 or 6 bad snaps, and got better every snap.
That's J Rodgers' burner.
I mean, if those sacks didn't come in the late in the game, I would accept the got better every snap, but it's just not realistic. Like, I've said this before. I think Manu exceeded reasonable expectations that game. He did. And giving up 2 sacks to Trey Hendrickson in your debut is nothing to cry about. Like, that's going to happen to a lot of dudes. I do find it a little interesting that it feels like the Lions are already, I don't want to say giving up on Manu, but they're not investing in the potential of him being a starter at all. Like, they're just not counting on that at all. And, you know, because they're not, I'm certainly not going to project that into the universe. I think tackle is the direction they're going.
Yeah, not to rehash the Bengals game too much, but I'll just say, like, all sacks aren't created equal. Like, a tackle who gives up a sack while holding that block for a few seconds is different than a tackle getting beat clean off the line of scrimmage and allowing his quarterback to get clobbered. And, like, both of those sacks that game very well could have resulted in, like, a devastating injury to Jared Goff. And, like, if that's the risk that you run when he's out there, it's really not a risk that you can afford.
Yeah. I could be wrong. I felt like someone said they talked to Manu. It wasn't me, but and said like maybe one of those was a miscommunication at least, but
Yeah, it was.
So
I don't know. That's a symptom of inexperience.
For sure. And first game on the road, first start, and you're going against Hendrickson. I'd give him a pass, but obviously like they are counting on him. They're you draft a guy like that to hopefully show progress, at least going to year two or year three. I mean, it's about to be year three for him, and they're not really factoring him into the plans, it doesn't sound like. So I don't know. You know, Brad has said in the past it takes 3 years to evaluate a player, but I think it's more like 2 years plus training camp from basically business. So we'll see. I think this is a big year for him.
Well, he's down there in Cleveland again working with LaCharles Bentley. Like, I mean, he's putting in the effort, I think. Absolutely. You know, for as you know, I guess down on Taylor Decker as people are right now, like Decker invested a lot in Manu, not just in some of the stories we wrote about with training camp and pulling him aside, but like it kind of let Manu attach himself to his hip and like study how you handle an offseason as a pro last year. And it was really, really eye-opening for Manu. I think we saw a bit of a jump from year one to year two. And, you know, if all goes well in Cleveland for him, and I think LaCharles Bentley is a guy to trust to get the most out of your potential, like, I expect to see a better player this year and, you know, realistically should be competing for that swing tackle job, depending on what they do in the draft.
By the way, Steven, we appreciate you as well. $5. He said over the last 10 years, 60% of Pro Bowl / All Pro edge rushers are taken in round one. However, 25% are in the fourth or later. With tackle, it is 63% in round one.
I'd be interested seeing all those numbers. I mean, like, yeah, that's where the talent is, right? Like it should be that way. I bet your quarterback's even higher, right? Like, so, I don't know. Running back's probably the exception, right?
Yeah.
Maybe
guard.
I also would like to see, back to our other conversation, tight end, because I think tight end's another one. You see a lot of greats at Trey McBride, Dallas Goedert, Sam LaPorta, a lot of good tight ends. No offense to Kenny Sadiq. I got no beef with him. All right. The guy's incredibly specimen. But yeah. Definitely add that one in the equation. Before we move on, we have to do a very special shout out to our new sponsor of the show, Prize Picks, which, by the way, you can use that code HMA and get you play $5, you get $50 instantly. And today we are going to go through my bet that I have today. And here, let me get the fellas in here so we can fill this out. Here we go. Hold the phone. As soon as we get this out, hold on. We got that. All right. As soon as we get okay, it's not working here. Hold on. Let me get this. All right. There you go. Bang.
Doing great.
Bang. Man. All right. Let me share my screen. So the bet today for Prize Picks, sponsored by Prize Picks, is let me get this on the screen too. This is just a disaster. Here we go. All right. John Collins. All right. John Collins. Let me tell you. All right.
It's super on brand for us.
Deep cut.
This is now I'll talk about how I crash out often. Well, sometimes I'm a betting savant sometimes. Sometimes I am not, but I love this one. I am obsessed with this bet. 17.5 points, rebounds, assists. Look at John Collins' last seven games. He hit this line six of the last seven. He just hit this line playing against the Warriors, and he's playing against the Warriors again. So the bet of the day for Lions Collective and for me, gamble responsibly. I might need to call the number. It's 17.5 points, rebounds, assists. Proud sponsor of the show. Use that code HMA, play $5, and get $5 instantly in lineups. We'll be doing a lot of Lions bets as well for this season. And I thought the best way to start off or this whole campaign would be John Collins out of any.
Absolutely. No idea John Collins was on the Clippers. That's a new
ball. I don't think John Collins knew that either.
All right, let's get back to it. Let me move this all around here. So now we got us all messed up. All right. I know someone just commented too, Dalen Bentley. This tight end class, by the way, I know the Lions. This is the interesting thing. I know the big conversation is like trade back, trade up. I know Brad's not going to show those cards. No GM's going to be like, yeah, you know, I only have 13 guys graded as first rounders, because then it's like, all right, you're probably going to want to try and move up. So he kind of keeps those cards close to the vest. Did he say that in the past, though? Didn't he say – am I wrong on that?
Only after the fact.
Yeah. Oh, after the fact. Okay, got it. That's the important information there. But people want to know, are they trading up or trading back? I've seen both, you know, both options. I think the realistic one is obviously trading back, given they don't have – they only have two picks in the top 100 picks. And if they're going to trade up, it's probably going to be with all the picks they have later in the draft. But as we kind of get closer to the draft, where are you guys in terms of just movement? I know it's been reported that there's going to be – more activity in this draft. I know Brad kind of hinted at it. He can see it happening, but Brad likes to trade up. I know he talked about going all in and, you know, Isaac Tesla moved up 30 picks to get him. Wasn't in the first round, but he did move up to get Jameson Williams. He moved up to get other players, moved back to get Jahmyr Gibbs. So he's kind of moved in the first round before, but where are you guys at kind of leaning as we get closer to the draft? How do you feel about it?
I'm always so conflicted because I value the idea of going up and getting the guy you want. Like, you know, if you believe in a guy, go get him. But we also know Brad's expertise, his background is the draft. And maybe not in the last couple of years, but he's had a lot of late round success. And so if you're giving up three picks to get one, or you're giving up a future third to get a fourth this year, like, to me, it's just sacrificing bites of the apple, because there is no guarantee with these things. You know, even if it's a 50% chance a fourth rounder works out in a meaningful way, like, I'd rather have three shots at a coin flip than one shot at a coin flip. And so, you know, it's a delicate balancing act. Obviously, they got back some late round picks in that Tesla deal that people seem to conveniently forget. I think there's a fifth and sixth rounder attached to that in the three thirds they gave up. But, I don't know. In this case, when we talk about BPA need again, like, if you're in the first round and that guy you love is at 14 and they're willing to hear you out on an offer, go get them. Go get them. I don't care. I understand why people want to trade back, but I would rather them get the best fit for their roster, not just now, but for the next 4 or 5 years.
It kind of
seems like, go ahead, Colin.
My bad. It kind of seems like teams are more willing to trade down then trade up this year, I guess, based on like my read on some of the talks out there. So if a team just wants to pick up a fourth and they're cool, like trading down a spot or two, like maybe the Lions make that move. If there's a guy that's just like sticking out like a sore thumb. You know, Brad, obviously, I think Stoney asked him on Monday, like about going all in for a player. I think the context Stoney meant was like maybe a veteran that can help you now. But I think Brad took it in like a draft context. And he said, absolutely. Yeah. If it's the right guy, you guys know me. I feel like you guys get mad at me sometimes. Like, I do it too much sometimes. But if we have that conviction for a player, absolutely, we're going to go and get him. So, I mean, he's done it before. I wouldn't be surprised if he does it again. I agree with you, Justin. I think he's pretty good in the later rounds when he can, at least early on in his tenure as Lions GM. I think getting guys that can help you here, like Malcolm Rodriguez, James Houston had a nice run here for a little bit. I think he exceeded expectations for a sixth-round pick. So you can find guys that can contribute, be rotational players on day three. But if you feel like there's a dude that's going to make an immediate impact and he's sticking out like a sore thumb, like, yeah, he's going to go up and get him. I would not be surprised by that.
Yeah. And for the record, the way Stoney framed that question answered itself, because he asked Brad, would you make an all-in move for a player who was a guarantee or near guarantee to make the Super Bowl? And Brad was like, well, yeah, isn't that the purpose of the job? So, yeah, I mean, he had to say yes. And I mean, his prior draft moves have reflected that. You know, I've spent a lot of the offseason assuming or I don't know, thinking that the idea of trading back in the first round was potentially built into their larger offseason plan to fill the hole that exists in the third round between pick 50 and whatever it is, like 118 or 120. But it feels even more likely closer to the draft that they just trade back into the third round with one of those extra fours they have picked up. Like they've accrued some decent capital on day three where they could make their move back into day two. And I feel like that is more feasible right now than like a move down the board in the first round.
I need to go back and look at the Project Martin trade because they basically got that third out of thin air. They made it happen. So maybe that's a blueprint for what they can do with those day three picks.
I think it's always important to remember, too, like, of course you'd like to trade back. I think probably 20 teams would be interested in trading back and picking up extra assets. And right. There has to be a player and a fit for a team that's willing to climb. So it's almost easier to trade up just because there's so many teams that are hungry to trade down. I look back at the Jameson Williams trade, like it feels like they did not give up. I know like the value ended up being somewhat equal, but to move up from 32 to 12, it feels like they did really, really well that year. And like I said, to move up from 17 to 14 or 15 or 13 or whatever, like the cost isn't going to be particularly steep, but I'm trying to like look at like what player do we think is going to be available at 17 that is going to have like people rushing to the, you know, the phone lines to call the lines up to trade down. Like, Sadiq, I don't know, maybe. Sadiq, maybe
a quarterback needy team.
It's got to be. Yeah. That's always the big one for sure.
Maybe the Eagles, who could use a long-term tackle, want to jump the rest of the teams there and just go and get someone. Like maybe they really like the Honichor. I don't know. I could see that, but I also think he could just be there at 23 for them. But,
Dan Orlovsky might offer up a couple firsts for Ty Simpson.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. By the way, I was looking at the Broderick Martin trade, and it looks like they gave up 122 in the fourth and then 2 fifth-round picks, 139 and 168. So 122, 139, 168 for 96.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not bad. I would do something like that. They got the capital to do that on day three. Don't want to get back in the third.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Justin, because if people talk about trade back, you need a team that wants to trade up. And the unfortunate reality is you're going to have to say no thanks to a player that maybe even potentially you could use. I mean, maybe it's like a, you know, maybe it's Vega, you know, maybe it's like a Jermaid McCoy. Like maybe it's someone that it's got to be someone there that's worth teams trading up. But it also could be someone that maybe you could take that you're going to be okay with passing up on. Because all I've read, it's like, it's not making sense to me. I'm like, all the reports are like half the first round wants to trade back. It's like, okay, well then who's trading up in that instance? So I'm leaning more to just staying put at 17. I think trade back, if you're going to do one of the two, you're trading back to get more capital, but I'm with you guys. I think if they trade up, it's going to be day three to get into day two, not trading back from round one. I think 17 is an interesting spot. You're going to be right on that line of like, there's going to be a handful of guys that I think could fall to you that I would rather the Lions just pull the trigger on rather than trading back like six picks or more, you know, five picks to pick up more capital. I'd rather just Brad get his guy, and to be honest with you. And I think a lot of the fans are assuming a trade back, but I don't think that's necessarily the case.
I don't know that we'll ever see the day where Brad moves back in the first round, sacrificing the player that he likes to the team that is moving up. Like, they had the option of doing that last year, late in the first round with Ty Leek on the board at 28, and the Bills wanted to move up and get him, and the Lions knew that, and they weren't willing to move back even three or four spots at the risk of losing Tyreek Williams to Buffalo. So, if the guy that Brad likes is there and someone comes calling for him, Brad's probably just going to hang up. Like, I got my guy, and thanks, but no thanks.
I think as much as I love the mock draft simulators as much as anybody, like they're fun. But like when you do them, you get the situation Colt was talking about earlier where you get 14 offers for every pick and you get to filter through and pick the best one. You can just keep trading back. Like I think a lot of the times when you're on the clock, especially early in the first round, maybe later in the draft, you get more calls. But I think there are times, actually, I know there are times because we've asked the GM every year whether they got calls. Like there are times where the phone doesn't ring at all. Like nobody's trying to trade up for your pick. And, you know, that's the more realistic view of round one.
Absolutely. I have a proposition for you guys. I want to run something by you guys. And
is it John Collins?
It is not.
Jeff has it. Dang it.
Jeff has it. Okay. So I've been thinking about this, especially after Brad talked on Monday. So obviously we talked to Brad about, you know, skipping owners meetings and, you know, I think Rod Wood said it, at owner's meetings, you know, part of the reasons Brad's not here is he's back in Michigan, still fine tuning the draft. Brad made it seem like, you know, basically when he goes to owner's meetings, that extra time really cost him and he has to play catch up and he didn't want to do that this year. So seems like he's locking in, right, on the draft. It also seems like the Lions are keeping a relatively low profile this year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In past years, those, like, list of, like, reported 30 visits or even, like, local visits are pretty lengthy. Obviously, they canceled local pro day, so that's another thing that, hey, we just want to utilize that time on some other things. And Brad said they made that decision last summer, but still, you're not doing local pro day. And the list of reported visits, I have Pride Detroit's list up right now. Shout out to Jeremy and those guys. Pre-draft visit tracker includes top 30 visits and local visits. DeMarcus Lacy, wide receiver Marshall. Donovan McCauley, wide receiver Michigan. Tyree West, defensive lineman Tennessee. Caleb Banks is like the only name in this like list that seems like he'll be a day one or day two option, or at least like top 50 potential player. Caleb Banks, Florida. Jay Hunt, Cincinnati. Jimmy Rolder, linebacker Michigan. Andre Fuller, DB Toledo. Normally that list is pretty lengthy, and like it covers guys in the first and second round that are notable dudes. Not a lot that's been publicly reported. That makes me think that the Lions are trying to keep things in-house if they can.
I noticed with that list, Colton, is most of those guys are either from Detroit, played at Michigan State, played at Michigan. It's not all of them, but it's almost all of them, including Banks.
Right.
And so where do we get those lists from? Where do those top 30 visit lists come from? They come from agents, right?
Yeah.
And I think we've seen in the past, both with this regime and the previous one, like they'll step in and like, hey, we're going to invite your guy out. We don't want this out there.
Yes.
Don't do it, or it's going to impact our relationship with you.
Correct. And I've had conversations like that at the combine, trying to talk to agents about what the Lions are doing. They're like looking over the shoulder, scared that like someone from the Lions is going to come see me talking to them. So like that would not surprise me if they're keeping that same approach for the draft this year. So all that in mind, I was thinking about this when Brad was talking. Why is the one player they're linked to Caden Proctor? Like the one player that's been publicly reported, oh, the Lions, he's not making it past 17. You know, they just love the guy. Like he's going to be on the first on their board. Like you hear so much of that chatter from Daniel Jeremiah. I know Matt Miller was on Ben Raven's pod and Corey Wood's pod saying kind of the same thing. So I'm like, why is the one player being attached to the Lions, Caden Proctor, but their actions suggest that they're trying to keep everything in-house?
Yeah, so
that's why I'm wondering if it's a bit of a smokescreen. And I think go ahead.
No, I mean, it looks and smells pretty smoky to me. And I think the simplest answer to your question is because he's the one player that I think some people have disassociated from the Lions. You know, I know we've had a conversation here on this podcast. I know there have been other rumblings in different sectors of Lions coverage, maybe even national coverage, that see a player who doesn't totally fit the Lions definition of an ideal offensive lineman, and they want to reinsert themselves into the conversation. Like obviously they're a team that everyone around the league knows is probably eyeing an offensive tackle in the first round. And I would imagine the Lions want to be perceived as in on all of those offensive tackles. And so it feels intentional that they have, if this is coming from them, made it known that we still like Caden Proctor, just in case they really love someone like Monroe Freeling. And I'm not sitting here saying that Brad's watching the Lions Collective each week, but it does strike me that Caden Proctor stands out as the only offensive tackle that people have said might not be a Lions fit. And then we get like a few weeks later, this report that no, the Lions love Caden Proctor.
So I watched Caden Proctor in that little tape study today, and a man that size should not move that way. Like he's super exciting in a phone booth. Like the way he kind of bursts out of a stance and just mauls guys. You're like, okay, I can see what people love about this dude. You know, he might've had bigger calves than Ishan Ashore, right? Like just, I'm staring at calves today. That's what I'm doing. I try really hard to stay away from the Beast and Bob McGinn's like really great scouting reports until after I've kind of finished and processed my own thoughts. I went to McGinn's comments today. If you're not familiar with Bob McGinn's work, which is published through Go Long TD, he talks to scouts and he gets all these anonymous scout quotes on each player, and they're fantastic. This is the one from Proctor today. I wanted to like him. He has a little bit of movement for being so big, but his game against Auburn, he's just standing around watching. He teases you and then ultimately disappoints. Big, good-looking dude, but not physical, not a lot of grit, just stands around and watches. And there was a rep that I watched today. It was a screen pass, And he got up out in front of it and then just jogged alongside his running back without looking for contact all the way down the sideline until his running back got popped by a dude that ran right by him. And I go off the board. Like, and obviously that's hyperbole, but like,
yeah,
that's the kind of stuff like the Lions hate. And so, you know, we talked about Proctor, or we made Colton talk about Proctor maybe more appropriately during our dog and pony show last week. But there's just enough smoke there with some of the reports on the character, the football character in particular, that just says no, it's not the right fit despite these massive, massive physical gifts.
Yeah, and it's not even this year, Colton, where they've kept things pretty discreet. Like, when in the past, under Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, has any real intel about the Lions' plans in the first round or otherwise leaked out of Allen Park? Like, when have they ever come close to even tipping their hand? Like, obviously, Hush was the foregone conclusion as the second overall pick in 2022, but all of the other big moves they've made in the first round came out of relative nowhere as far as the national and local reporting on them. So I struggle to believe that suddenly they are legitimately leaking the idea that they love Caden Proctor. I feel like it's more likely that they love a Monroe Freeling, and they are trying to disguise some of their interest, their infatuation in Monroe Freeling by leaking this report that they're all in on Proctor. Like, you talk about football character. I feel like Monroe Freeling is definitely a Detroit Lions kind of guy. And, you know, he might not be your starter until 2027. I know, Colton, you think he might be ready to step in right away, but he wouldn't need to with Borum. But, man, like, the floor does feel pretty stable and the ceiling feels really high. And I love this story about Monroe Freeling speaking to football character. So when Georgia played Kentucky this past year, Freeling suffers the high ankle sprain that was supposed to knock him out for like 3 to 4 weeks, but they were playing Auburn next, and he was dying to play. And he caught wind that week that they weren't even going to travel him to the game. Like, he overheard some coaches talking about it. And so he texted the offensive line coach, and one of the coaches that was in that conversation was like, "Coach, you got to let me travel. Like, I need to be at that game regardless of if I'm playing or not. I need to at least be there to mentor the backup tackle." So he spent the entire week walking around in a boot. He slept in a game ready wrap, just like hoping he could do whatever it took to play. They ended up traveling him. And then the morning of the game, the offensive line coach approaches him and says, "Hey, like, in an emergency, could we use you? Could we turn to you?" And he was like pleading with their offensive line coach, like, "Please, coach. Yes. If you need me, put me in." Well, Georgia goes nowhere on its first two drives. They're down 10-0 on the road to Auburn, and it's time to break glass. They go to Monroe Freeling, they put him in there, and you know, he helps them rally to a 20-10 win. Like, played the rest of the game, 65 snaps. By the way, most of those against Falk, who he considered the most difficult pass rusher he faced last season. And that's the kind of football character, competitiveness, that the Lions would fall in love with. And I feel like that story alone just screams Lions more than all of these other questionable stories we've heard about Caden Proctor.
Yep.
Can I, I'm gonna throw a layer on top, a smokescreen layer on top of the smokescreen layer, right?
Love it.
If they draft Monroe Freeling, I think he is a left tackle.
Yes.
And his tape, the pass protection was superb for a guy that's got, what is it, 13 starts or 18 starts? Like, the fundamentals on this dude were incredible. And yeah, there's something left to be desired with the run blocking, but day one, like, I agree, he could step right in. But is the Panay Sewell to left tackle part of the gigantic smokescreen to free up possibility the chance of drafting Freeling? I'm probably way into the conspiracy loop here, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
I like it.
It depends who they like. I think, like, Freeling and Lomu in particular can play left tackle in the NFL. I think some of the other guys are probably more right tackle. So it's like, who do you prefer? What do you prefer? Do you like Panay at left tackle long term, and then maybe you just try to find a right tackle, or you think one of those guys that's fine at right tackle, but maybe you want more of a run blocker at right tackle. We have Panay on the left side protecting Goff's blind side. So I don't know. I just look at this and I'm like, if they're telling – everyone knows they want a tackle. So maybe to muddy the vision a little bit, you say, well, we like this one tackle in particular. And then you trick a team into taking that tackle for you. Then you get the guy you really want. So my antennas are up, the tinfoil hat, I don't know. I feel like Brian Windhorst, like, why would the Lions do that? So that's where I'm at right now, like a week out for the draft. But I don't know. It could be nothing. Could be nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I just desperately want Proctor to be on the board at 17 Thursday night so we can find out the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would benefit more to the positive publicity that he's gotten than Caden Proctor. He went from like 20s, projected to go in the 20s, to now like the Browns might consider him.
Well, the smoke screen is working.
Yeah, it's like Dan Orlovsky. I mean, I don't know what's going on. Ty Simpson. I don't know what's going on there. He's helping out Ty Simpson. Now he's beating with the Cardinals at like whatever pick four. But I think another player that kind of fits that, and I'm not necessarily a massive fan of, like, you know, maybe the production from a pass rushing perspective, but I am in love with the character, especially hearing him talk at the combine, is Keldrick Falk. Like, I think that's another guy that's just like screams like the Lions are going to love this dude. And you haven't heard anything about, like, I've heard, like, early on in the process is like Keldrick Falk's a top 20 pick, and now he's still mocked around there, but you haven't heard anyone really pumping up Keldrick Falk that much. And I just think everything he said at the combine, just the way he approaches the game, and honestly measurable wise too, like, I think he is like I think he is what they want Marcus Davenport to be. Like, I think that's the type of edge they want on the other side of Hutch. People might not necessarily love that, but he's 21 years old. You know, he's 6'6", whatever, 260, 270 with massive arms. I mean, he talked about the leadership qualities. You know, he's a captain at Auburn. They have to earn the right to rush the passer. Talked a lot about that. They defend the run. That's something he prides himself on. It's like, I think I've, this is another part of the maturity from myself here, from, you know, covering the Lions. I think I'm starting to be like, you know what, less about the wows and the stats. Stats matter, obviously, but I got to look at the human being a little bit more, and it feels like Keldrick Falk, like another dude, like Blake Miller, another one. These guys are just like, I think it's becoming easier to recognize Lions, you know, and I think Falk, whether people love him or not, myself wouldn't be thrilled with his upside, but he does have a lot of upside. And that could be another guy that, like, no one's really talking about. Kind of like Ty Leak, talked about him a little early, but that's a guy who was a second-round pick. Keldrick Falk would not be surprised. I would not be surprised at all. And at 17, they just fire away Keldrick Falk. And Brad goes in, tells you guys, hey, I got the edge rusher. Tell the fans. I got the guy.
To me, the smokescreen isn't just for another offensive tackle to get that tackle you really want. To me, it's like for – a defensive player, really the best player available on the board. Like, you think out, you bait someone into taking Proc before you, and then you get like Falk or safety or someone like that too. So I think it absolutely extends to Keldrick Falk. My takeaway from the draft is that the Lions are going to love that guy. That has not changed one bit. I still think he's an option at 17. Just depends what the board's looking like in front of you, but he fits their profile to a T. And I think they've been looking for that long-term edge for a while, and it hasn't materialized because that right player hasn't come along. But I think Falk, for what the Lions look like opposite, what they want opposite of Aiden Hutchinson, with a long edge setter that can get after it in the run game. And I think he's got some untapped pass rush potential at 20 years old. And he had to line up all over the field, so didn't even get the pure one-on-one opportunities that a lot of these dudes did in his class, his peers. I think it'd make a ton of sense if they take him at 17 too. So not ruling that out at all.
When I talked about Monroe Freeling being pro ready day one from a pass protection standpoint, Falk is pro ready day one from a run stopping standpoint. Like, just has an exceptional feel for how defenses are how blocking is attacking him, how to fill those gaps and to use his length to shed and stop and set edges. The tape was really, really good there. You know, I would say I talked from a point of just statistical understanding before having the chance, you know, earlier in this year. And I still have some of those same concerns about the pass rush win rate and, can you get a guy that only has a handful of sacks and make that more at the professional level? And, you know, some of those concerns still exist, but I also looked at the way Auburn used him and putting him over tackle a lot, as opposed to a guy that's got some pretty damn explosive burst. If you look at the combine metrics with the jumping and the 10 yard split and the 40 yard dash, like I kind of want to see that guy get a little wider in the formation and see if he can turn some of this speed into power into these bull rushes. You brought up Marcus Davenport. I mean, it is, I think, a perfect physical comp. And we know that is kind of the epitome of what the Lions were looking on that opposite side. I think Falk is absolutely in play. And to go back to the character point, I'm sure Colton's heard this before from Rich Silva from Detroit News, who covered Auburn. He said when Falk had his first press conference at 17, like just the way he commanded the room, like blew away all the reporters there. And then I think it was media day for SEC, and they always send a senior to this event. And they sent 20-year-old sophomore Keldrick Falk to represent the Auburn Tigers. Like this kid's just got an incredible maturity and leadership about him beyond kind of the football acumen. I think with his age, with what he already offers in run support, like I think the upside there is a very, very logical fit at 17. I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, Justin, you mentioned the speed for him to win some pass rushes on the outside. You can also kick him inside. Like that is a big dude, and he would give you some pretty valuable interior pass rush with his size and then his quickness if you can line him up over guards. And we know how much the Lions like some of those outside inside pass rushers, and like there aren't a whole lot of them in this draft. And depending on how Aleem McNeil bounces back, we all expect him to. That still feels like a need for this roster with some interior pass juice or pass rush juice. And like Falk might end up in the NFL being a more effective pass rusher on the interior than the outside. So it adds a layer of upside to his game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, get ready, Lions fans, for anything. I mean, we go through this every year, but from the crash out king, everybody calm down. All right, calm down. Calming the people down. We're about, you know, a week out. We're going to do this again next week. Like, it's all right, guys. Get ready for anything to happen here. By the way, before you guys get out of here, like the stream, subscribe if you haven't already, and check out Prize Picks and our good friends over at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Kyle. I was there on Sunday watching the Masters. I'll be there for the draft as well. So it'll be a good time. We'll be back next week, but until then, we will catch you all.
Go John Collins.